Hi everyone. Today we are speaking to Melissa Tan, who is a Malaysian actress. She's also a TV host, an entrepreneur, and a climate activist. So thank you so much for making time, Melissa. Thank you for being here.
I'm super happy to be here, Vivek. Thanks for having me.
So I was just reading up your profile, just dig up a little bit about the people that I'm speaking to, and you started your career at KPMG doing something as boring as valuation of financial derivatives and other financial instruments. How do you go from that to being in entertainment? Like, how did the journey come about?
Yeah, I've always been a model since, I've always dreamed of being a model. I've always worked and kind of collaborated with other creatives in modeling in the places that I lived in, but I've never really made it into a full-time career. And naturally, because I was studying actuarial studies and finance in university, as any good Asian child would do, she would establish a base for herself that would give her, some form of security. So that's when I went into risk consulting in the Big Four. I really did enjoy it because, it exercised whichever right side of the brain that we're talking about here. But of course, that call was still there to be in front of the camera to express myself creatively in a way that I knew so intimately. So when the door opened for me to jump back into the modeling world through opportunities that were regional, then because I already had 4 years under my belt, I decided that was the path to take. It was a big enough door that flew open for me to cast aside any fears that I would have also. And then of course after that, the shelf life of a fashion model is quite short. I knew I had to expand my breadth and depth of what I did, and that's when I went to hosting, producing, and things like that. But then the call of my being here as a citizen of Earth and an environmentalist as heart at heart, I started to redesign my life and pursue other forms of knowledge in how we can live closer in harmony with the world that we come from. That's when I went into living zero waste, pursuing minimalism. And it was all a side effect of also, living from a suitcase as a traveling model. When I disengaged from stuff, all my stuff back in KL, when I disengaged from, consumerism and found that it was so nice to just live with what you had and what you need, what you truly need. And then I started to see it all fall away as the puppet strings of consumerism became looser on me. It was also at work as a fashion model where every day on an e-commerce day, I would be wearing 100 to 150 pieces of clothing every single day for a shoot. And I would be just one out of many models in that studio. The taste of this mass amounts of fashion and stuff that we produce and are programmed to buy, it started to wear thin on me. And I started to open my eyes and question, why did we even need all of this? And why are we destroying the planet for this when it truly doesn't bring us happiness? When I felt freer living from a suitcase and felt so burdened when I went back to my wardrobes full of clothing. So then it naturally progressed to speaking up about all of this, putting myself through the protocols of living zero waste and pursuing minimalism. And when people started to resonate, then that's when I started to spot opportunities for us to serve each other, serve other nonprofits, other movements, and other causes that when we all band together, we can go so much further. And it's been a really exciting journey so far.
So, I mean, for each one of us, just being able to discipline ourselves to live a zero waste life is difficult enough to actually get other people to listen to that message, resonate with it, and do that is even harder. At what point did you sort of feel that this was your calling or this was the thing that you wanted to do? You wanted to become a climate activist.
Yeah, because I think like most people, we view climate activists as the person who chains themselves to the tree to prevent the forest from being cut down. But taking action for the climate and standing for the cause can come in so many different ways. And to be able to relate to the common person and bring them along on the journey so that, collectively as a society, we move to a better place in the world. It requires that connection. It requires relatability. So I didn't really set out to become a climate activist. I just pursued my own curiosity and noticed the benefits that it was bringing me and shared about those benefits, the ways that I was living differently or found a way to live differently and how it was impacting my well-being and, bringing me more clarity and joy. It was through that process that when I received feedback from my audience on social media, which formerly was following me because I was a model, not because I was a activist, then I started to see, okay, then this is my role here. My role is not to sell more stuff. It is actually to sell the idea that there is a better way for us to live, and it doesn't involve destroying the planet. It requires us to be allies. And then through that, nature takes care of us as well.
So, being somebody who has been working in the area of fashion, you mentioned that you would go through 150 clothes during an e-commerce shoot, for example. You started this movement to wear preloved clothes, right? You wanted to encourage people to reuse clothing rather than throw it away. How did that come about, and where do you see that going?
So I started with first living from capsule wardrobe, and that's when I lived from a suitcase. That was when I was still traveling as a working model. And I realized that I was feeling good every day because every day I was wearing an outfit I loved. But when I came back to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, where my home is, when I had, 200, 300, 500 outfits in my wardrobe, I would feel like I have nothing to wear. So how come five outfits serves me better than 500? Then after that, I realized that there was a lot of excess in my wardrobe. There was a lot of things that doesn't really make me feel the best that I could feel, and I started to question, how did this even come into my life? Oh, it came into my life because I saw someone else wear it. I saw it on social media. I saw it on a lookbook, a campaign. I saw it, it was 50% off. That's why it came into my life. It was so unconscious the way these things were coming to my life. And if they didn't really serve me, why were they there? But they could serve someone else. And in fact, we all have this excess wardrobe in our lives. Pieces that we don't fully love, that aren't truly us, that don't feel good on us, that maybe we've sized up or sized down. Maybe we, put on a little bit of weight or lost a bit of weight, or we moved into a different phase of life. People becoming, mothers or, teens growing into adults, young adults becoming adults. As we progress through life, these excess wardrobe, they're just sitting there, but it doesn't mean they have no value. So then two girls in Kuala Lumpur, they kind of put up a little Facebook post and say, "Hey, why don't we host a clothes swap?" And I attended one of those, and then I saw the potential of what this was, because now what we're doing is not just shopping our own wardrobe, we're shopping each other's wardrobe. No one actually had to buy new. What we're doing is recirculating this excess wardrobe between each other. So since then, I've hosted, 4 years worth, 4 or 5 years worth of clothes swaps. And what I've noticed was the people who keep coming back again and again, and they'll tell me things like, "Melissa, I don't even shop anymore. I don't even buy any fashion anymore because it just doesn't make sense within our community. There is so much clothes in existence. Why don't we all just keep sharing? We would actually never run out." And for me, because I'm in front of camera all the time, I'm on stages, emceeing, presenting, and all of these things I do in my job, I actually dress better than ever before now. And I haven't bought any new fashion in 5 to 6 years. So what I'm really showing is that being fashionable and being stylish and dressing more like yourself, it doesn't require us to consume fast fashion. It doesn't require us to be on this vicious cycle of buying, throwing away, believing that the next outfit that you buy is going to complete your life, because that is not true. So that's how it started. And, 4 or 5 years in, this is still what I'm doing. And then, of course, that translates into other forms of engaging the community through education, through workshops, and through designing community experiences that show us the potential of what the circular economy really is. It isn't just about how can we recycle things. It's about how we can really respect the resources that our planet has given us, and then, make the most out of it instead of treating everything as disposable.
Right. And so, I mean, there have been a number of initiatives that you've been involved in this, the zero to waste living, the sustainable fashion. There's also waste reduction in community businesses in cities that, you have been working around. You've been talking to a lot of people. You've been doing a lot of activities in those areas. Of all of these things that you are doing, which one do you see having the greatest amount of impact?
I think they all have their place, and one is not above the other, because all of these are really access points for people to pursue where they stand in the climate movement. Some people will relate to zero waste living more, some people will relate to how does it serve families. Some people relate to minimalism. Some people will relate to sustainability in fashion, or clothes swaps, or ocean conservation, or there's going to be a different hit point for everyone. And now we're just looking for access so that we can invite them into this space. And then they can become climate activists themselves, because we are all activists. What we're doing is just acting for a future that we see, whether you see a future that is capitalist, linear, consumeristic society, or one that is circular and living in harmony. So I don't think there's a scale to which is more important. They all play a significant role. And without each piece, it would not be complete.
Understood. So, in terms of what you recently did, you've been to Antarctica, and there have been a lot of really devastating reports coming out over the winter in the northern hemisphere, summer in the southern hemisphere, that the ice sheets are melting really, really fast over there. What was your experience like? What did you see? What did you learn? What was that experience for you?
Okay. Well, I got the opportunity to go to Antarctica on the Antarctic Climate Expedition with the renowned oceanographer Sylvia Earle last year, with Ocean Geographic, a society based out of Australia. And these I was in the company of a lot of, I guess what you call them, OGs in the ocean conservation movement, people who are like scientists, climate communicators, artists, foundations. And some of them have been on, expeditions to Antarctica before 10 years ago. And what we were doing there was to document the remains of the Antarctic and its and the effects of climate change. Because when we think of the Antarctic, we think of, white snow, penguins, ice. But on this expedition, we went through, all the places that the tourists don't usually see. And we, did research and collected samples of water, air, and whale studies as well. So I think the thing that stuck with me the most was you had to know what you were looking at. So every time we went for a landing, I would be obviously blown away by the beauty around me, the infiniteness of the Antarctic continent, and how I was just a small speck, but yet I was a part of it. My heart would expand, and I would be taken in with the completeness of the moment and my role in the world. But then when I would look to the side, I would see a fellow expeditioner, maybe someone who has been to Antarctic in the last expedition, who have done similar studies, and they would be crestfallen. Their face would just be devastated. And it would be because they could see the difference from the last expedition and how stark it was. Not even just 10 years ago, more recent expeditions, 1 or 2 years before, you would see what they call watermelon algae all over the ice. So the ice would be streaked with red and green algae because now Antarctica has warmed to such an extent that this snow algae can proliferate. So it's no longer white, it's watermelon colored. We would see, I would go, oh my God, look at that baby penguin. So cute, so precious. And then I look to the side, and a fellow expeditioner would be like crestfallen because they would realize, this is too late in the summer for it to be born.
Right.
He's not going to survive. Out of, 10 water samples, all of them had microplastics. When the air samples came back, and Antarctica is a continent which doesn't have a fixed human civilized human settlement. So out of the air samples that came back months later, it had microplastics in the air. So there is no borders for plastic. Plastic has invaded every corner of our planet, even in the most remote parts like Antarctica. Even when we were on landings, or even when we went out of the ship, you can hear ice cracking. You can see all the little bergy bits everywhere. And it was really about, what would you focus on? Would you turn away from this and focus? No, wait, but let's take a really good picture at that part because it looks beautiful. Yeah, but we cannot ignore that this proliferates, this disaster will keep continuing, and there will be no on target left for any of us if we continue.
Right. So, I mean, you're a bit of an entrepreneur. You have Supper Good, which is your agency that you're running, and you're doing all of this work for climate. In terms of the work that you're doing for for climate, do you see a way to scale this beyond Malaysia, beyond where you are doing this? Do you see a way to bring this to many more places? Because, as you mentioned, what we are doing is affecting the remotest corners of the planet, right? I mean, you're finding microplastics in Antarctica. You're finding the remnants of the destruction that we are causing elsewhere on the Earth in some of the remotest places. So it's only important that we take all of the good work that's happening and also take it to every corner of the planet, right?
I do a lot of international collaborations, working with international nonprofits, like, collaborating with Greenpeace. I run the Malaysian chapter of Fashion Revolution, and I am part of Ocean Geographic, the Ocean Conservation Society that works with all these global movers and shakers. But I think that's not really the point. While we can take a lot of, while we can take a lot of learnings and wisdom and knowledge, we must channel it to local efforts. You know the saying, think global, act local, because each of us has a slice of the planet that is the one that we're most connected to. And it's not about us flying off to go and support and contribute to an international organization. It's about us staying here, wherever we are, to make sure that it changes within our communities because there is no borders to any of this impact. Carbon emissions is, it travels. Plastic, it travels. Everything travels. Every single choice that we make every single day in our lives, in our communities, in our businesses, in our own governments, they create global impacts. So it always comes back to what can you do and what can you do the most of in your circle of influence instead of trying to create influence somewhere else.
So true, so true. I mean, I had written a blog a long time ago about belonging to a place, and we keep traveling so much, we keep moving from city to city for work, that we don't end up belonging to any place at all. Like, when you ask me, I'm like 3 years there, 3 years there, 3 years there. So which place do you really belong to? You don't really belong. And the point that you make is so true and so important, that it is where you are that you belong to and make a change over there. Such a powerful point. And on that note, I'll bring this podcast to an end. Thank you so very much for your time, Melissa. Thank you for sharing all of your insights.
Thank you so much for this time together, Vivek.